Okay, everybody, welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John, here again on a live stream tonight. You know, I'm so used to doing this live stream on Thursday nights in the middle of the presidential campaign, when we had a lot of the leading LP candidates on to talk and discuss some of the issues of the day. And it's kind of a weird position for me, to be honest with you, because I kind of come on and I'm like, hey, here's my guest right away. It's Chase Oliver, Mike Tamad, Rechtenwald, or whoever, you know, Josh Smith, you know, not that he ever came on the show for various reasons, but you get my drift, right? There was always somebody here right away. So I have to change the tenor of the show a little bit, get back to talking to some folks about libertarian issues from a libertarian perspective, not necessarily about who we want to win the election or anything like that. But of course, we're going to turn to that. You're watching us on Grumblings Media's channel here. So for all your great content requirements, please go to grumblingsmedia.com. You can catch past episodes of this show, Free For All, my interview show, The Big Questions with Big John. If you're more conservatarian, if you're more Republican, like Angelo McCardle and Dave Smith, we've got conservative podcasts too at Grumblings Media. You can check out Fired Up with my partner, William Del Pilar. And we've also got lots of different great podcasts on sports, pop culture, and a lot of other interesting topics. But for right now, I want to bring on my guest for the evening. Let me pop him here on the stage. There you go. It's Hody Johns here. And Hody, say hi to the folks. Introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Big John. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I'm just some guy. I am a professional video game editor and writer. Journalist, editor and writer. I run the Love First Christians group and Bible study. That's an open invitation for people to join. Really plugged into more cultural issues, and that's kind of my link to liberty. And join the Libertarian Party. I guess some background that'll be relevant to our conversation today. Worked for the George W. Bush campaigns, was a strategist out there in Colorado back when Colorado was still a swing state. Republican for a long time. And then a few years ago, after the Tea Party movement went down, the GOP, of course, betrayed all our candidates, sold out their own candidates, willing to lose and tank elections.
Right.
In order to get, they didn't care if Obama won so long as our liberty guys lost. And I realized that libertarianism was not going to happen in the Republican Party. I left to join the Libertarian Party. And then the recently, Libertarian Party went and joined the Republican Party. So, I guess it's all a big cycle there.
yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting. And folks, I've been, on my Twitter feed, I've been trying to turn down the snark a little bit lately. I've been having trouble with that. But Hody is somebody that has popped up on my feed a lot. And I find myself agreeing with a lot of his positions, if not on every individual issue. But certainly he seems like somebody who's very thoughtful, somebody who's less interested in pwning his opponents and more interested in having a discussion. So I asked him, and he was, I have to admit, very receptive, just pinged him on Twitter, said, hey, man, I do this show. Would you be interested in coming on and chopping it up a little bit? And surprisingly, very quickly said, I'd love to come on. So thank you, Hody, for joining us. Really appreciate that. And FYI, your cred as a gaming journalist, I have a feeling my partner William Del Pilar is going to reach out to you at some point and invite you on to talk about gaming, because he's a big he's big into how wokeness is destroying the gaming industry. So I wouldn't be surprised if William reaches out to you at some point and says, hey, come on my podcast too. But for tonight, you belong to Free For All for this purpose. But we'll definitely have you keep that in mind. But anyway, so Hody, let's start off with a lot of the things that have been going on. Obviously, a lot of the bad blood between, let's say, run-of-the-mill prags, as there, I don't know if that's an insult or a descriptor necessarily, but who the LNC, the people who control the LNC, we're talking about the Angelo McCardles, the Mises Caucus, the Dave Smiths of the world,
Russell.
Clint Russell, thank you. And folks like that. The Rechtenwalds, the Kaufmans, you know, they tend to look on us non-libertarian nationalists, and I'm still trying to work out the meaning of that oxymoronic phrase, but that kind of view us as feds and sellouts and whatnot, okay? And to be fair to them, like, I will say that I'm not an anarchist. I don't hide that. And I consider myself a minarchist or even perhaps a classical liberal. So let me ask you this, because in reading your stuff, it's kind of an interesting journey. And also in hearing how you came to the Libertarian Party politically, starting out as a Republican, kind of, if I can be so bold, kind of mirrors sort of my journey, maybe 30, 40 years apart, of course, because I think I've got, as you could tell from the snow, I've got a couple of years on you probably,
don't
right?
Speak too quick. Look at that. I got no okay. hair up top.
Oh, man. See, I thought that was a fashion choice. But
it is because there's no hair up there.
Gotcha, man. But like I say the same thing, like growing up as a, say, a younger man, say in my teens, in my early 20s. I consider myself a conservative Republican, a Goldwater Republican, a Reagan Republican when that came around. And then very, very quickly after that, I became disillusioned. And I became disillusioned with the realization that it was always a choice of the lesser of two evils when you're dealing with a duopoly. It's always like either who you hate more or who you hate less, right? And more often than not, it's like, well, I don't care for my guy, but I really hate their guy, you know? And that realization hit me right around when you mentioned the George W. Bush presidency. And after that, I decided never to cast a vote for anyone I didn't believe in. It would always be a vote of a positive affirmation, a positive selection, instead of the, I just hate the other guy more. So seeing as that's sort of similar, I appreciate that what you said. But let me ask you this. So initially, would you categorize yourself as someone, not necessarily a dues-paying member, not necessarily like someone involved in campaigning or strategy, but would you have considered yourself a Mises Caucus type of libertarian initially?
Yeah, you said you wanted to give them a bone, like some credit, and I'll give them plenty of bones.
Sure.
Nick Sarwark bumping into somebody and then threatening to call the cops on them. Look, he's
hilarious.
Person hilarious. Could have gone to jail. He could have ruined somebody's life if it wasn't caught on camera. This is a guy who, when John Phillips and Karen Harlos and Aaron, you know, these are not people that got along politically, obviously, but all of them were like, hey, he threatens us regularly that if we don't vote the way he wants. And when I heard that, I was like, let me contact other members of the LNC and see if that's a common experience. And I just want I don't have my exact numbers anymore, but I want to say it was probably about 3/4 of them said that they had been threatened by Nick Sarwark if they didn't vote one way, you know, the way that he wanted on some particular issue.
Now, when you say threatened, what do you mean by that exactly? You don't mean physical harm, right?
I believe it was more like I just said threatened in any way. And okay. I granted them anonymity. I said I would never mention the specifics of who answered what. I wouldn't want anybody to take my word for it. Contact members of the LNC from that time and ask them what their experience were, you know. And some of them, like I said, a quarter of them did say no. So it wasn't with everybody. But I got the sense that it was more like threaten your political future. You know, I will, you know, make sure that you can't run again. That sort of thing. They were different circumstances. There was like, hey, I'm going to turn off the record button, but you know, you're still here with me and let's kind of talk and kind of that like mafia style behavior.
Right.
And okay. I think the Mises Caucus was correct that they just weren't strong enough when what they would call the COVID regime, but essentially the mandates and lockdowns were going on. And you even had guys like Chase Oliver, you look at his tweets during that time, constantly against the lockdowns, constantly against the mandates, just saying this is absolutely unacceptable. And of course they'll tell you, well, we oppose them. And because they had like, you know, one or two, you know, tweets that year that were like, hey, you know, government force is probably bad though. And it was just such a huge part of everybody's life, not only here in America, but in the world. And we really needed some more statements, some more bold statements. And I'm not the kind of guy that's like, I believe the vaccines saved lives. You know, I'm not trying to be like partisan about this, but I do think when you cross the line into making something a mandate, these are freedoms that they take that we don't get back. We remember this. It would be like us being silent after the government overstepped with the Patriot Act.
Right.
That's not the right time to be silent. We have to be outspoken.
And I do agree with you, because to me, a libertarian position would be, okay, you make your own decision on the vaccines, right? So if you think they're going to help you or protect you, feel free, right?
Yeah.
But I think every libertarian would agree, as you pointed out, Chase Oliver did, like, yeah, the government shouldn't force anyone to take this medication, right? And I think that's perfectly acceptable position to have. But you're saying that perhaps the Sarwark-led LNC wasn't either vocal enough or strong enough in that statement, or was the expectation that they would also come out against the vaccines themselves?
Sure. So I never wanted them to come out against the vaccines, because that is they're depending. And I think this goes person to person, right? It's a medical decision. Yeah. We talk about this all the time. Those should get left to individuals. And I think for some people, it made a lot of sense for the condition they were in. Their age was a big factor. You know, as far as the decisions that they made to get the vaccine.
Right.
So absolutely, we shouldn't be giving people medical advice. If we tell somebody not to get it, how many videos were there from hospital rooms being, I thought I wasn't going to get it, and then they're dead 10 minutes later, and their last words are begging people online for them to get it. I would never want to be responsible for someone's death, you know, and that would cross the line into responsibility. What I wanted from, and I'll just give you a specific example, is Nick Sarwark himself. When somebody be like, man, look at the way government grew during COVID. And he would just ask, how did government grow during COVID? And I provided him I copy pasted a whole bunch of links, examples, put a lot of thought into it. And he just didn't say anything. And then he went on somebody else's post like a couple of days later that was like, oh yeah, you know, government taking over from COVID. And he said the same thing. Well, when did government grow during COVID? How did that happen? And I realized at that point it crossed the line into bad acting, right? Like, this is what racists do all the time. They say, well, where's the evidence that race science is garbage? And you give them 100 million things. I had this experience actually exactly with Jeremy Kaufman, right? Like I said, oh, race science is garbage. Here's a bunch of evidence. Like, because I thought at that time he was a reachable person in my, you know, like I was a Mises friendly person. So I was like, oh, yeah, like, and I understand how a person might genuinely be a racist, but think that they're being scientifically accurate. And sometimes being scientifically accurate is unpopular. You look at eugenics in America, right?
Like,
libertarians have to take a stand. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I understand how you might be misled. Let me help correct you. But he ignored everything I said, would only engage people that wanted to do name calling, mudslinging, right? He wanted to engage like the loser brigade kind of thing, and didn't want to engage in genuine information. And I remember just him asking, like, give me any proof, me answering, then I'd see him post on another post, give me proof, give me proof, give me proof. And it was just like, okay, so obviously this person doesn't want proof. Nick Sarwark did not want proof that government had grown.
Now, why would, I don't know Sarwark, to be honest with you. And
I don't know him very well either.
And in full disclosure, I have reached out to him to either come on this program or to come on my interview show and give him basically to give him a platform for an hour or two and say, like, okay, tell me your positions. Tell me why the Mises people are bad in your opinion. Tell me what went right. Tell me what went wrong under your leadership. And, you know, from as an outsider, I could see where he grew the party in terms of just popular vote and things. Right. So it's interesting to me. Why would you think that he would not accept that government grew during COVID? Well, like, it seems to me pretty obvious, if for nothing else, just the debt that was incurred, printing of all these dollars. Right. I mean, we know that there was more debt printed under Trump during COVID than any other president combined, all the other presidents combined, right? So why do you think he would have been so obstinate in saying, like, what would be the see, it sounds like someone who either doesn't know what he's talking about or has an ulterior motive. So assuming that he knows what he's talking about, what do you guess might be an ulterior motive for him saying, like, hey, I don't see where government grew. Give me some examples.
I want to be as fair to him as possible. I think that Nick I think that Nick believed that he was growing the party in the best way that he knew how. I believe that I don't think there's any of these steps that he took that he said, even if he knew he was lying or threatening somebody or whatever it may be, I think he was like, this is probably for the best interest of the party. How often do we see this in government, right? Like, yeah, it's bad, but it's in the best interest of people, right? Like J.D. Vance is all spin a tail if that's what it requires to save America. Kind of thing, you know? So I believe that he, you know, while being a deeply, you know, having, and I don't want to say deeply corrupt, only God can judge him, but having deeply corrupt issues, I believe that he tried to do them in service to the party. And you know what? I'll throw the bone the other way too. He saw what the Mises Caucus was well before I did, right? Like, now he did lie and said, like, what it was because, you know, and since I was sympathetic with them early on when it was like, oh, all those guys just wanted the Charlottesville rioters, like the white supremacists, they wanted them in the party. Well, I mean, you had people like John Hudak and Archie Flowers, strongly anti-racist people that were part, and they were actually members, like recruiters for the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus. Right. So it was such an absurd thing to say. But I think he saw the danger of the Mises Caucus. He had seen already Tom Woods with Confederate flags around him. He'd seen already Dave Smith calling, and I don't want to say these words on your show here, but he's, I mean, still, you watch his appearance on the Tower Gang, still uses F slurs for gay people, still uses R slurs for anybody he doesn't like, still uses K slurs, right? Like, I mean, this is somebody who will use this is really off-putting language for people that I want to be in the Liberty Movement.
And right? And who are you referring to when you say that? Is that Dave Smith or Tom Woods?
That was Dave Smith. That was Dave Smith.
Right? Yeah.
And so he sees these leaders, right? And just recognizes all their problematic features. And it's not that I didn't see any of the problems. My hope is that these problematic parts would get kind of phased out, you know, like as you welcome somebody. So I'm a Christian guy. I told you that already, right? Like I'm big on the church. Nobody joins the church perfect. And so and people act like, well, how imperfect is it okay to be and still be in church? And I don't really like that kind of gatekeeping idea. What I want to do is have people that are imperfect, but have systems within the church that help create and foster perfection. So I recognize that Tom Woods and Dave Smith had some problematic elements to them, as do we all, right? All have sinned, right? We all have problematic elements to us. But I thought it would have been great if Nick had welcomed them and encouraged them to kind of, hey, let's do better on like immigration, as opposed to right off the bat constantly what he did with Tom Woods, like posting a bunch of black rappers on his timeline, being like, does this irritate you kind of thing? Like trying to troll him a little bit. And I was like, you know, you just clearly, and he'll say it, like he recognized their hostility right away. I recognized their problems right away, but was hoping that maybe this could be like a fusion. I still am a big part of the problem listener with Dave Smith. Like, you know, I still like Tom Woods. Like, you know, I don't love grooming or anything like that. I recognize problems, but I also can recognize the value that someone brings. And my hope was that when these people came to the Liberty Movement, we could iron out their problems and keep all the good stuff. You know, like that's what a good organization does. We kind of encourage the goodness within people and have them leave behind the bad, as opposed to just gatekeeping and deciding which imperfections are acceptable and which are not.
Right. And you know, it's kind of funny because I'll be the first to admit, after the Reno takeover, I kind of saw what I think you're describing Sarwak saw. Now, I've said all along, I'm not an anarchist. Never was. I'm not a Ron Paul guy. I was always a Milton Friedman guy. But I've always said, I don't object to the philosophy of anarchy, for example. I just think it's impractical. And I also think it's too hardcore for our lifetimes, meaning long after you and I are gone, Hody, anarchy still will not have taken root in its idealized form on this earth, right? So I'm willing to work with anarchy. Like, here's a perfect example. Spike Cohen. Love talking to the guy, find him super cool, super engaging, does tons of good for the party, does tons of good as for people, you know, working through his organization, right? He's a self-described anarchist. I could get along with Spike Cohen all day long, right?
Yeah, I'm an anarchist. I hope we get along, right?
Like, right. And see, that's why I wanted to talk to you, honestly, because from your posts, I could say, well, this guy's an anarchist, but he doesn't have what I saw as a negative and what I immediately said, look, these guys are MAGA plants. You know, it's like, I know it sounds conspiratorial. And look, maybe that's my allowance as a libertarian. That's my conspiracy allowance as a libertarian. But you mentioned John Hudak, who I've never had the pleasure of speaking to directly. But again, follow his Faketarians handle.
Yeah.
And I had asked him, I said, look, you're throwing a lot of accusations around. Is it just accusations or you know? And he actually sent me a couple of links. Like, I still don't know the truth of them, but at least they weren't just accusations. There seemed to be a lot of research involved, right? And he said the same thing. He goes, these guys are MAGA plants, you know. And the thing that alarmed me was when they took out the anti-racism, anti-bigotry language from the LP plank day one, and it had to be Spike who negotiated something back. And I think it was Justin Amash who said, like, what do you gain with that? You know, like, you don't gain any new free speech advocates, but you are sending a message out to what you will now tolerate. And to me, that was a big negative. I don't know. What did you think about that? Did you see that as a red flag initially, where like, hey, we're taking this language of anti-bigotry out?
Yeah, so I had gotten on. What's funny is I was even supporting the Joshua Smith campaign at the time to, I think, his first time to DC, Nick Sarwark. You know, and I was on board at the time. Sarwark seemed to be, you know, I am the best way to say it. I'm for maximum economic freedom and for maximum personal freedom. I think taxation is theft, and I love my queer friends. Like, there's just, right. I'm not, and I don't budge. I don't negotiate on those. Now, I get along with people who don't, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, otherwise, I would live a very lonely, sad life.
Most sure.
As you mentioned, John, it's not feasible in our lifetime to get the maximum of both,
right?
But me personally, like, I don't want to go anywhere that my free market friends can't go. And I won't go anywhere that, like, you know, my gender and sexual minority friends go. My racial minority friends can't go. Like, and not just only can't go, but are welcome, like, enthusiastically welcome, you know? And that's what I want to see is this is a movement in liberty that's enthusiastic. And Joshua Smith, I mean, dating Risa Willis at the time, great advocate for personal issues, right? Like, Joshua Smith was kind of like really good about that stuff. And then I recognized that the drinking had become a problem in his debates. And just for his own benefit, I remember saying on the campaign, just being like, hey, you should probably, you know, not drink when you're going to have a debate go down, you know, because I mentioned he was at the beginning of a debate was just like, well, I'm drunk, but whatever, I'll debate socialists, I guess. And I remember just being like, hey, man, I don't think we should do that. And I remember him just being like, oh, you think Sarwark doesn't drink? You think these guys? And I was like, whoa. Don't get so defensive. I'm just saying, maybe alcohol and you don't mix, you know, like maybe, I mean, save it for when it's leisure time and not when it's time to, when you need to be at your sharpest, you know? And I was always for the personal freedoms, but I remember at that time, and this is kind of a famous incident between myself. I was with the We're Libertarians podcasting network and Chris Spangle and, loved the show, still a part of it. I mean, we're still together. And Michael Heiss came out and was like, oh, well, Chris Spangle, you know, says that there's no way in hell that, like, he'll support the Mises Caucus. And so those guys are all just a waste of time. And I remember, like, I was like, I'm donating money to the Joshua Smith campaign right now. Like, what are you even talking about? Chris Spangle went live being like, the last time I talked to you was the convention. Here's a history of my cell phone records and everything. I actually interviewed a couple members that were a part of that decision with the Mises Caucus just a couple months ago, and they talked about it, how they said they needed a preemptive strike because they knew people like me were never going to let go of personal issues. And so if they found somebody that was good on economic issues, that's fine. But if they weren't good on personal issues, I was never going to support them. And so they just said, we know we're going to lose that person, so let's cut ties now. Tell a lie about him. I was blocked before, like, I woke up and just blocked one day, right? And I was like, what is happening right now? Like, I blocked by the Mises Caucus. I can't talk to any of these people anymore. I didn't know what was going on. And it turns out that, yeah, it was just a preemptive strike against me and people like me, where they recognized that personal issues were very important to us. And if they were going to propose a candidate that was only good on economic issues and kind of, I mean, at the time they were pretending to just wave a white flag on personal, on cultural issues, right? They said, we're going to wave a white flag in the culture war. They're certainly not doing that anymore. That's for
sure.
It's all culture war now. But at the time, they were like let's wave the white flag in culture war. And they knew they were going to lose me and people like me. And so they made a preemptive strike. And that was kind of the beginning of when my eyes were open. So my eyes were open a little bit before Reno because they had already made the strike against me. Now, I still to this day cannot, like, when people like they're going to support Trump, they're going to, I was like, come on. Like, I've heard Dave Smith on his podcast say Trump deserves to be drawn and quartered for war crimes, right? Like, in public, you know, I've heard him talk about how it would take a miracle for him to ever vote for Donald Trump. He would have to abolish the Fed and have Ron Paul as his vice president.
Hody, I have to tell you, among the other things, but just on what you said, I have to jump in a second here. I have a lot of questions because I'm not an insider. Like, I love libertarianism. I love talking about it, but I was never a political insider. I run away from politics and especially organized politics. So I have to ask you some questions because what you said to me was a little bit fascinating here. So Let's go back to the point where you're saying, okay, we've got these Mises guys, Heiss being, say, the guy who really organized everything. And I've read some of Hudak's things, but I won't mention him, Ryan. I'll let you speak to your experiences. Sure. It seems to me like when did they become, as a group, you said, okay, they're more interested in economics, say, as opposed to someone who, like, say, might be anti-transing. I'm just picking a cultural wars point, right? Yeah. That if they found a candidate who was free markets and everything, they could support someone like that, and they really didn't care about, like, the cultural issues. At least they wouldn't, you know. When do you think that evolved into full-blown this thing called libertarian nationalism, which, again, is an oxymoron, but, like, where they're now described as right libertarian. They're interested in, you know, even if you're a free stater, it's a free stater only for certain types of people. It's okay to engage with and welcome, let's say, flat out bigots, flat out alt-right, flat out, for lack of a better term, Nazis, right? And that, it's okay, we're just engaging with them. It's part of free speech. I've seen Dave Smith talk to these people and lend them credibility. No one is arguing for censorship, right? Even the worst Nick Fuentes, I'm like, let them talk. I'd rather them be the best disinfectant is light. Let them talk. But do we have to lend them credibility, right? And I think, to me, those were the first red flags where I'm like, this Mises thing isn't working out for me. And again, is it to myself? I was questioning: is it because I'm not an anarchist, and that's coloring my judgment, or do I actually have real issues that I'm perceiving perhaps a little bit ahead of the curve? Perhaps I and that was my internal dialogue on that. I think what sealed it again was that plank being altered. Like, what was the point of that? Like, I still cannot understand what the point of that is. You could still be a free speech champion and say, I believe in free speech, but guess what? We don't want no Nazis around here. That's a perfectly libertarian position. You could have your free speech. No one's calling for your censorship. And by the way, just let me toss this in there, Hody. If you're watching us on YouTube, X, Rumble, Facebook, wherever you are, if you have any questions for Hody or myself, or if you have some comments, whatever it is, please feel free to hit us up in the comment section. We'll take your questions live. We'll answer them. I think Hody's going to be willing to, right, Hody? You'll address some people. I'm sure you will. You don't seem to be a shy guy when it comes to that. But, okay, so that's sort of like where I was on that. Now, I think Hudak also made some accusations that Heiss was paid by Patrick Byrne to sort of deliver the LP to Trump. Because famously, Trump said it was the libertarians that cost him in 2020 in several key swing states, right? The libertarian vote beat the spread between Biden and Trump. When you put all this in a pot and shake it around, Hody, do you see any validity to that? That, look, the takeover was always intended to deliver this right libertarianism, libertarian nationalism, whatever it's called. Do you think that was always the case? Do you think it evolved into something like that? Because, again, folks like yourself, folks like Karen Ann, who we've had on the show, and she said, you know, I was due. you know, I didn't see it early on, you know, and I still love a lot of the people in the Mises Caucus, but that leadership, it pulled the wool over our eyes, essentially, right? So how do you feel about that? And do you feel this was always the plan, or did it sort of get away from people and it became the plan?
I really don't know. I would only be able to hypothesize. I understand that, like, what was it, Heiss? Was it Bannon that he was, like, had pictures and stuff with?
Well, right? I think it was Patrick Byrne, who was the former CEO of Overstock. And he's one of the key.
I remember that.
He was what? Right. He was one of the key guys who ran Trump's election denial campaigns in Arizona, I think, maybe Georgia. But there's also rumors that this originated with Bannon, that this was Bannon's strategy. You know, that he deployed these people out to accomplish this. But I think the Bannon connection is less. There's less of evidence for Bannon as opposed to Byrne, which is, I think that's where Hudak is saying, I've got pictures. I've got texts of the guy saying, I got 50K for this, you know, Heiss saying I got 50K for this. But again, allegations made by John. So I'm not making those allegations. But so to your point, do you think that was always the case, or do you think it evolved into something like that?
I'll say this. And I think it was always the case for maybe some, right? Like they were always, and this isn't just, of course, they're mostly right-leaning, but I think there are some from the beginning that they liked Trump, and that even during the first term, they were just like, ordinarily libertarians, you can bash a politician, nobody blinks an eye, right? Like it's understood. But with Trump, when you'd bash him, people would be like, well, are you hating him for the right reasons? Are you sure that's him doing it, not the deep state? Are you sure that's, it was just excuse after excuse after excuse. Right. And so I do think that there was some like love and desire for that. And of course, I came from the GOP. I worked with them. I've done the NDAs. I've scheduled the interviews. Like I get how all this goes. And from the GOP end, is it something we would do? Absolutely. The thing is most people weren't. I want to be as kind as I can here. Because the thing is, we lied to a lot of people with the GOP. We took advantage of a lot of people. Most of the time, it was like some business owner. Right. If it's not written down, of course, any meeting we have has an NDA. So they're never allowed to discuss, you know, to say what was discussed. And if we never put in writing that we'll give them some type of legislation they want or the person that they want or the lobbyist they want, then it's just not going to happen. Right. It's like that never happened. We'll take their money, but we're not going to give them what they wanted in return. Right. Like the reason you see RFK being selected the head of Health and Human Services, because he understands the law. Right. There is an agreement between the Republican Party and, you know, him, where I shouldn't say the Republican Party, between Trump and him, that he would get that position, so like Health and Human Services, versus, you know, all the other business owners that also had promises made to them who won't be getting what they want because they don't understand the law well enough, you know, and so we would take advantage of people like that. Right. And you see this happen with the Libertarian Party. We hoped that they would do what they want. My issue is when I was with the Republican Party, the libertarians were always the smartest people. They always knew I was a scumbag, right? Like I'm the GOP guy. They know I'm out to get them. So we made promises. I mean, this is why people have been trying to get the libertarian vote forever. We have this tug of war with them, with us and the Democrats, right? That we'll give you this, we'll give you that you want, right? But they were always empty promises. And the libertarians were like, listen, we're not changing our vote until we get that in writing. We're not going to throw any support behind you until you actually make some commitments and not just like something I said on TV, because like I said, we lied all the time. It's nothing new. Trump's not new in this regard. He is the best at it, but he's not new. And so, you know, we would lie all the time and that would be fine. But the libertarians were the ones who knew we would lie all the time. So am I at all surprised then that these libertarians that sold out for Trump aren't getting what they wanted in return with the cabinet? Of course not. Because unfortunately, while the Libertarian Party used to be run by people that were highly gifted and highly intelligent, it's run by people. And I'm trying, the reason I say this sounds cruel, but I'm being nice because the alternative is that they're evil, right? Like they did this on purpose.
Right.
I think that they just got taken advantage of. I think that they had a bunch of promises. They said, we've got them on TV saying it. That's got to be good enough. We'll get a Libertarian Party member in the cabinet. And I laughed as soon as I realized they didn't have the necessary paperwork done, because it's a move I pulled myself a bunch of times. like I said, libertarians in the past, way too smart to fall for it. Libertarians today, apparently just right for it. I do believe that they want liberty. I don't think that they're just on Trump's payroll. I have seen their lives. These people who have these lives, like, it's super corrupt to get your baby daddy on the payroll and not clear it with people, right? But the fact that you need your baby daddy on the payroll means she's not getting a fat check from Donald Trump in the mail, right? Like, the fact that Heiss would have to do what he does in order to make his money. He's not some mega billionaire. He's got not getting, like, paid out buco bucks. He's not moving into Mar-a-Lago. You know, this is a guy who is just a guy. You know, he makes normal money. I believe that they did these deals to try and advance liberty as best they could. I think that they care more about economic liberty than personal liberty. I think they might, even if they care about personal liberty, I think some of them have the argument that economics matters more, or economics comes first. We have these priorities, right? Economics, then war, then your individual freedoms, and so on. And so I want to be as fair to them as I can, because I don't know their hearts. And when I don't know their hearts, I'll give them what I can. That being said, I'm still going to call out when they lie or get lied to, or I'm still going to notice when something stupid happens and be like, right, boy, that was dumb. That sure didn't work out. And if I don't think something's going to work out, endorsing Trump was never going to work out. Selling out our candidate was a horrible idea. And it is going to have, I mean, state of the Libertarian Party right now speaks for itself. Membership and money alone. We're broke, and we have fewer members than at any point that I can ever remember being in the Libertarian Party. This was never a good move for us. And if we had learned from the paleo movements before, because that's the other thing, Big John, I don't know how much you want to get into this, but we've tried this strategy before. Twice, actually. Even the paleo movement that we remember, Lou Rockwell cites when this happened 30 years ago. And he remembers, he says, hey, well, look what happened then. They sold out, but we didn't get what we wanted in return. This time we'll sell out on a few issues, but we'll get what we want in return. Then he wrote a post-mortem on that and be like, hey, we didn't get what we wanted in return. When Lou Rockwell tells you it's devolved into a bigoted anti-Semitic disaster, you should probably take him seriously, right?
Right,
like, none of this worked out. And then we've done it again for the third time. Angela's tried to say that the difference between those times and last time is they actually left and joined the Republicans, whereas this time she's encouraging them to stay. But I see no evidence that anybody stayed. As soon as you start endorsing and supporting Republicans, it's over. I mean, you're doing a finance committee for the Republicans, essentially, right?
Yeah. And that, to be honest with you, that's the part that's kind of very strange to me, because, like, the strategy, as you said, of trying to make the Republican Party more libertarian, right? So as everybody tends to forget sometimes, Ron Paul got elected to federal office as a Republican, not as a libertarian. Justin Amash, as a Republican, not as a libertarian. I mean, although at least he switched in his final term to become the only Libertarian Party congressman, right? A little bit of theater there. Yeah, right. A little bit of theater, but at least he did that. And of course, there's guys who are generally good, like Massey, right? Who you say, okay, that guy, or even Rand Paul to a lesser extent, right? So I get it. There's libertarian-ish people in the Republican Party, but the strategy of saying, "Hey, we're gonna drag this party to the liberty part of the political graph," that has proven to be a failure. And I would get on the show and say, "What's the strategy of inviting the candidates of your other parties to your nominating convention? What's the purpose of that?" You know, oh, it's never been done. I heard Dave Smith say, it's never been done before. Yeah, there's a reason it's never been done before. You know, it's like, what's the upside of that? What's the upside? I'm still trying to understand. And I've talked to people, like someone like Todd Hagopian said, he would never say this publicly while he was still on the LNC. But afterwards, he said, I was arguing publicly very hard against that. You know, like, I did not want Trump at our convention. I did not want RFK at our convention. Karen Ann, I saw a tweet today from her saying, I apologize. I got taken in. I was wrong. And I'm surprised at myself for being so wrong at that time. You're a guy who's saying, okay, look, I had experience. I worked for the Republicans and I kind of worked for the Libertarians. Unless you were someone who was in the bag from the start, I hate to be this direct, but in my mind, there's no logical path that I can find where someone legitimately thought, let's invite Trump and RFK. Let's form a co-fundraising thing where RFK gets whatever it worked out to, 90%. I don't know the details, 90% of the fundraising or whatever. And we have nothing on paper. We don't even have a commitment to a big L libertarian joining the cabinet. What's going on here? And at the same time, we're fostering more and more divisive people into the party. Not, I'm saying internally, but people that to the rank and file, to the everyday voter, are off-putting. You know, when you start talking about racism, bigotry, talking about people with low IQs, you've got people in New Hampshire urging their members to follow Democrat elected officials around and spit on them, yell at them, throw stuff at them until they leave the state. This is deplorable language. And for anyone to just say, ah, it's just them, it's freedom of speech, let them talk, and passively condone it, when the chairman of your party puts on the clown nose and makes a statement like, don't vote for our candidate where it would hurt Trump, only vote for him where it would hurt Biden. When did we become cheerleaders for the Republicans? When did we become Democrat killers specifically? So that to me is not a good-natured mistake. That's not someone who said, let me try something new.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Do you agree with me on that? Or do you think I'm being too cynical with it?
No, I think you would have to. What I am doing is I'm giving them the benefit of sheer stupidity. Whereas you're saying that level of stupidity is not fathomable. You know what? It would be difficult.
I kind of am. Yeah.
And I get that. It's one of the two. It's either they're sellouts, they're bought, or whatever it may be,
right.
Or they're incredibly dumb. And I don't know. This actually goes into what you talk about getting rid of that plank, the bigotry plank. Listen, yeah. The reason we have that, for anybody who hasn't read The Guarded Gate, go read it. Collectivism and racism is antithetical to libertarianism. It's not,
yes, sir,
just because the argument was, well, we don't condemn all bad ideas. We don't say no pineapple and pizza on our thing. Why do we have to condemn racism and bigotry? Those are antithetical to liberty. It's like saying, well, you know, I'm a Christian. Why is it I should have to condemn something like lying? Well, it's antithetical to Christianity. We don't lie here. We rejoice in the truth, right? It's like, well, we don't mention every single mistake. Yeah, but lying is one of the ones that's really kind of critical, right?
Right.
Up there with, it's a sin, you know, it's bad. And so it's this type of bigotry and collectivism is and has been used, and especially when they founded this party, with the understanding that in the decades prior to, you had collectivism specifically be used to target libertarians and liberty, and being used, weaponized against those people,
right.
You know, and it's definitely a top-down thing. Racism is not a bottom-up thing. It's a shocking, when you look back on it, how this was a government-led, government, you know, pushed, all this racism, all this bigotry talk, all this closing the border
right.
talk was all top down. People did not want it. Now people want it now because, of course, the head can wag the dog, you know, even if the tail can't. And,
right.
You know, you have all these political leaders pushing it. But the libertarians from that era knew that. We have forgotten it. I guarantee you the state hasn't forgotten it. They love stoking racial tensions. They love
sure.
playing identity politics, right? So unfortunately, by ditching that plank, we weren't only saying, we're okay with some bigots coming in the party. That's fine. Obviously, it did signal that. But in addition to that, we were saying we don't understand our own philosophy. We don't get it. You know, it's like somebody who wants to, you know, when we say I want to be faithful to my wife, we're talking honest communication. Financial fidelity, right? Like companionship, caring about each other's needs. We're not saying, how far am I allowed to go with this woman who's not my wife until I've technically
right.
cheated,
right?
If you are dipping a toe into the pool of statism, you don't love liberty, right? The point isn't to see how close we can get to statism. The point was liberty. The point was individualism. The point was all these wonderful good things, which it would be focused on. And when we give in to the bigots, we say, how much of this bad thing can we get, can we kind of have in here before it kind of creates a pollution problem.
Right.
Well, turns out it only needs a crack in the door before your Jeremy Kaufmans, you know, go absolutely wild. Like you mentioned the average voter. I am deeply in touch with that because while I am a radical and I'm aware I'm a far out there person, right? And I push for these things.
Sure.
I am deeply connected to the individual. It is the average person. I mean, God loves, what's the quote? God must love ordinary people because he made so many of us, right? I have a deep love for the ordinary person. And the ordinary person doesn't hear, remember the hot mic moment at this last
where
that person was just saying things that no person in public would, you would get smacked in the face for saying this at any place, even Republican convention. The guy makes a joke about Puerto Rico, and what do all the Republicans at the convention go? Right?
Yeah.
And yet we have a guy talking to people all around him, just going, well, we all know, you know, black people aren't as smart, but they got, you know, bigger penises. Yeah. And you can line up a bunch of people of any race, and I can put them in order of IQ. And that's caught on a hot mic. Like, they're talking about how, like, we can't be desperate enough to elect a gay person, right? Like,
Hody, I gotta tell you, when I heard that, I texted my partner, William, and I was like, now, he's a Republican. He's a conservative. He has, you know, like, you know, he calls himself a conservatarian at times, but he's not really a libertarian. But I said, but he's been involved in local politics his whole life. He's much more steeped in political machinery than I am. So I literally naively said, okay, to me, this sounds nuts. Is this typical? Even though it's a hot mic, I get it. But is this how delegates usually talk to each other when they don't think anyone is listening? And he was like, oh, God, that's horrible. He goes, I don't care how you slice it. That moment was horrible. And I'm sort of convinced that's what cost Recktenwald, among other things, the nomination, was like just to have people saying, like you said, like, let's line them up by IQ, talking penis sizes. You know, we're never going to go for a gay guy and things like that. And yet they're still defenders of the Mises Caucus. And I've asked Termott this. I've asked other candidates that have come on here saying, like, do we feel that it's because the bigots are simply the squeakiest wheels? They're the loudest of the trolls? So we get the sense that the Libertarian Party is now comprised of those types of people? Or is it your sense that it really is a vocal minority?
I do believe it's a minority. And I think that we see that with Chase Oliver defeating Recktenwald. That minority is not as minor as I would like it to be, right? Mm. Like, obviously. I mean, you and I look at somebody like Michael Recktenwald talking about how, like, Judaism is a recent phenomenon and Jesus wasn't a Jew, and, you know, calling Chase Oliver, you know, an F-slur or whatever, and just write him off, right? Like, we roll our eyes and we're just like, you know, normal people would just hear that and just be like, oh, that's terrible, right? The thing about libertarians is we're very logic-based, and that is great. We're very policy-based. That's great. Principles, fantastic. The thing is when we talk about pragmatism and what actually works, what we need to talk about is that character obviously influences these things. There's this saying that no matter who we vote for, we get John McCain, right? That's a Tom Woods quote, right?
Right.
And sure enough, like, he even reposted it again as Trump's, you know, filling the swamp back up with his cabinet. He's like, yep, we got John McCain again, right? Like, no surprise here. And that is not an accident. That is because we elect people with extremely low character. Even though their policies are different, their character is what makes them the same. And libertarians like to ignore character and focus on policy because we have so many of these policy ideas. Now, I agree with our policy ideas. The problem is if the person instituting those policy ideas has low character, then they won't happen. Well, remember Trump going into it, wanted to get rid of 19 agencies his first term, none of them ended up being gotten rid of because his character, his stamina wasn't there. As soon as you're in the White House, you've got people rubbing your feet. You got people massaging your ego. You got people asking you favors. All of a sudden, all those promises you made don't look as lucrative anymore. What matters is this, my ego, my power, my consolidation, my personality, my legacy. All I care about is this. And my character was so weak, you know, that I allowed all these other terrible things. So with libertarians, we don't focus enough on character. And to me, this needs to be a priority among libertarians going forward. If we're advertising to everybody in the world, we're getting rid of government. One of the first things they think about is, what am I going to do when there's a jagoff around, when there's somebody trying to rob my car, when there's somebody bullying my kid, when there's somebody shooting lawn darts on my lawn, when there's somebody lighting firecrackers off at 2 a.m., right?
Right.
And so what we as libertarians, as opposed to being culturally removed, we need to be culturally invested. We should be teaching people good behavior as part of libertarianism, right? Christianity, when you were to look at it and ask the Pharisees what it was, it's following, well, I guess Judaism in their case, but it's following these policies. It's belief in this, right, that, or the other. You ask Jesus what Christianity is, what faith is, and it's in healing, right? We're told in Matthew, he spoke no scriptures to people. Instead, what did he do? He healed and spoke in parables. He spoke their language, he related to them, and he just brought them healing. Libertarians should be the ultimate in people that are love first, that we are pushing that we care about you and love you first. And policy should be there, present, if you'd like it, but secondary. Because if we're looking to set the world free, then we need to convince people that the world is ready to be free. And right, that means if we ourselves are such, I mean, the New Hampshire folks pushing reparations so that, and in order to deport Black people unless they shut up, right? Like these are just things that we say, okay, obviously you have bad character, but they want to say, well, it doesn't matter because as libertarians we can say whatever we want. Okay, well, if in your technical logical world maybe that's true, but we recognize that liberty takes a step backward. Why is it that all these bigoted libertarians have the biggest following among the duopoly, whether it's the Republicans or Democrats? You'll notice that the Project Liberal, when they split from the classical Libertarian caucus and started promoting a bunch of pro Kamala Harris stuff, social media views way up, way up, way up. You know, as soon as you get a Jeremy Kaufman, what happens? All over Fox News, all over MSNBC. We want you to see who Jeremy Kaufman is, and we want you to think of libertarians as Jeremy Kaufman, right? So you've got like Joshua Eagle and Jeremy Kaufman, and the duopoly loves for people to think that the libertarians are that. They want to think of them as people that would sell out their neighbors for personal gain, because that helps their candidates, versus the ardent libertarians, which are content with a small following, but making an actual difference in their communities, participating in things like Food Not Bombs, you know, participating in civil disobedience, you know, in a very loving way. You know, we libertarians, we do civil disobedience. The point is to do good in the world and to say, look at these people trying to stop us from doing good. Whereas you have the New Hampshireites who will do evil in the world. Say, look at these people trying to stop me from doing evil. And you make it very hard to be on your side.
Yeah. Right? And of course, you know, their philosophical answer for anything is Hoppe, right? They'll be like, oh, well, Hoppe says, you know, we should be anti. Like, I swear to you, after talking to Jacob Hornberger, another one who could, you know, I was like, okay, every libertarian I've ever talked to is open borders, or at least the least restrictive immigration policy possible, right? Like, I think Chase Oliver's position was 1,000 Ellis Islands, right? You know, Jacob's like, I couldn't care less. Have them stream across the border. They're human beings. They deserve a shot at a better life. Now, I can understand that you could have some quibbling on that scale, like completely open border, least restrictive borders, right?
Right.
But the position of lock down the borders, arm your citizens, shoot anybody that's coming across the border. These are positions that I heard from, I could be wrong, but definitely from the New Hampshire folks. I believe Joshua Smith had that position as well. And I was like, wait a second. If you're a Republican, that's in line with your thinking. If you're an authoritarian, that's in line with your thinking. I am unaware of any libertarian faction, sect, belief that allows for that. I'm struggling to understand. And Hody, that's the part that I struggle with. It's like, not necessarily that, look, I had the pleasure of interviewing Walter Block. I bring this up all the time. Walter is an OG anarchist. He's an OG Rothbardian, right? I believe he was Rothbard's student, right? So, and he says, Big John, I don't understand. He goes, I'm an anarchist. I'll proudly admit we make up maybe 1% of all libertarians, right? We're too hardcore for this world, right? But I've never met a nicer gentleman. I've never met anybody kinder that comes across like your grandpa, right? He's not angry. He's not he's not a misanthrope of any kind, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I have trouble also Spike Cohen, like we mentioned earlier, he's out doing good in the world. He's reuniting families that have been destroyed by the government. He's helping people with food drives. He's taking on legal cases for free speech. Rebecca Massey's case, you know, and here's Spike. He's saying and he came to the convention and pleaded, please, let's not do this again. Right. Let's not go into this nonsense where we're inviting Republicans to speak and talk to us here. You know, let's all, you know, we're all libertarians here. Let's focus on that. And yet you have this LNC. You have, again, not everyone in the Mises Caucus. And I know a lot of good people have quit the Mises Caucus over this issue. Why is it still a thing? That where again, maybe it's because I'm thinking too logically here, but where is the justification for the continued support of Trump? I think I asked Clint via Twitter. Tweeted at him is what I mean. Sure. Like, okay, you're all for now that Trump's back in, let's prosecute Fauci, let's throw him in jail. Matt Gaetz, you know, ignore your rap of having sex with a 17-year-old. Focus on putting Fauci in jail. And I'm like, okay, who was the architect of the COVID regime that you claim was the most traumatic experience of your life? That was Trump. He still brags about the vaccine that you gave poor Jacob Hornberger, raked him over the coals just because he said, let's move on, right? It's a personal medical choice. Let's move on. That wasn't good enough for Clint, right? He had to drag him over the coals. You're old, you're antiquated. And you know, but hey, you're supporting Trump. Wasn't he the king of the COVID regime? As far as I saw, it was his administration. Why does he get a pass? There's no logical answer for that. If your number one beef was the COVID regime, why does Trump get a pass? Biden was not pardoned, but Biden commuted Snowden's charges, right? Why are we giving him no credit for that? But we'll take what is likely an empty promise to free Ross Ulbricht day one, according to Trump, in exchange for the Libertarian Party being delivered to him. Where is the, I'm struggling. See, now it's not even character, because now, Hody, to your point, I'm not seeing that famed libertarian logic or libertarian show me the data. Why do you think this at this point, why do we think there's still so many people that are like, cope you prags, cope you feds, Angela's right. Today she posted that she will actively work to ruin the chances of any Republican that goes against Trump. Like, when did we become an armed subdivision of the Republican Party?
We're the AAA feeder team.
Yeah. Or AAA feeder team, right? So, and again, if you have those beliefs, I'm like, cool, Dave Smith, you posted this opus that said, this is why I voted for Trump. And I had a laugh. I've been a member of the Libertarian Party since 2018. You know, I laugh at that. Like, what about those of us that have been here for like the last 40 years? Like, we're just tossed aside. Our experiences mean nothing to you, but whatever. And I think I responded to that by saying, this is a long way of saying I am a Republican, right? So be a Republican. Be a Thomas Massey. Be a Libertarian trying to change the Republican Party from within. Why drag the Libertarian Party down with you? Why do you think there's this resistance to seeing what's actually happened?
I think it's seductive. And I think as I've kind of demonstrated that we forgot our history, and there's a pragmatism in being radical and standing by your values. And it's not just theoretical. You look at some of the greatest strides in liberty. Even when I was young, people said, there's no way marijuana is ever going to become legal in any state. No way.
Or gay marriage. That's gay the marriage obvious
was
one.
The other one I was going to bring up, right?
Yeah.
And so it's funny because these are issues that the Libertarian Party refused to capitulate on, even when it was overwhelmingly unpopular. We took right. something that one in maybe 20 at best Americans agreed with us on. And we said, no, that's the stands. That's what we're holding to. And if you want to woo us, you've got to hit that. Now, you look at the things we sold out on and tried to get in return. So, for example, during the last paleo movement, they detailed it pretty specifically. They're like, we'll give you the ability to restrict artists, right? Like, I know Rothbard and Rockwell made this pitch for how, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't care about certain types of architecture, rap or music or something like that, you know, that kind of focus on this monoculturalism, Hoppianism kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so the libertarians sold out. And as a result, we have very restrictive measures over that, you know, over owning your own music, over distributing your own music, very restrictive. You know, we successfully sold out. What did we want in return? Well, we said they promised they were going to get rid of the income tax. They promised they were going to abolish the Fed. We didn't get any of that, right? We sold out, but usually when you sell out, you're supposed to get something in return.
Right.
We got cheated, you know? And so we successfully gave away a lot of power to them in exchange for us. What was the pragmatic thing to do is learning from the past and saying what actually works is when we say we're not capitulating on this issue. You can come to us if you want to try to woo our voters. We can be persuaded. I'm right. not against voting for a Republican or a Democrat. If they are liberty leaning, right? If they are actually genuinely good at building liberty and they fight against their party. Listen, I've been in the party. You have to fight like the reason I joined the Libertarian Party is because even though I recognize the unlikelihood of being elected as a Libertarian, I made a calculated guess that what I saw from the GOP was impossible. Like Ron Paul's over here taking earmarks and voting for wars when he's in the Republican Party as a congressperson. I don't think that's who Ron Paul is. I think that's who Ron Paul and the Republican Party is because I'm familiar with how the Republican Party works, right? Like this is what we do. Fighting against it is very difficult. Like even speaking against it comes with huge risks.
Right.
You know, so you see people lose their liberty in that liberty, you know, when they step away into the Republican Party. I still encourage it, right? Like, go ahead. That's what I want to see. That's when I will actually say, yeah, some of our constituents will join you if you're actually working to give us gay marriage or actually working to give us, you know, allow us to kind of the right to try, right? Like the right to take a drug to try and save our lives.
Right. Of course.
We're not unreasonable here while being radical. We just want to say, I want to make sure I'm actually getting something in return. This thing, the only thing we were guaranteed to get was Trump when we sold out. Well, that's not anything, right? That's not a policy. All that's happened now is we appear to be a bunch of sellouts. People are laughing at us. Some of the, and this is why I don't think, I know it's not most Mises Caucus people. You see how disappointed they are in these cabinet picks. You see how disappointed they are that Trump appears to be breaking his promises. Look, I think he might free Ross Ulbricht in day one, but the exchange is he's pushing and hiring people that are okay. I mean, and he himself, okay with executing drug dealers, right? Okay with, what is it? What good is it to get Ross Ulbricht out, this guy who was a kingpin, who was like okay with organizing the murder for somebody who he thinks stole from him or whatever? And I don't mean to demonize Ross Ulbricht. It was entrapment from the beginning and everything like that. But let's be clear about who he is and what he did. This is not he was not busted for running a website. Like, well, that's why they wanted him busted, but they entrapped him by having him order an execution. You know, and so we're going to get one person who ordered an execution out of prison. Well, meanwhile, a bunch of people are now going to be sentenced to death or at least have a cultural shift in a way that is for executing their deaths because they smoked a plant. Why are most people on drugs and dealing drugs? Pain medication, pain management. These aren't just bad gangs that you see on the TV in the 1970s. These are people who are in agony, the people who deserve our love and compassion. And we sold them out in order to get Trump because he promised one cute little thing. Already he's breaking promises to us. We don't know if he'll free Ross Ulbricht. I sure hope they got it in writing. I sure hope he does it. But even if we get that, if the net is a negative about drug dealers in the future, we should never have made that deal. We need to be better bargainers. Ultimately, the radicals who stood by their values, who said gay marriage or nothing, legalization of marijuana or nothing have made a change. And the people who sold out all those times before, the libertarians who sold out before, we didn't get anything we wanted. Still got the income tax, still got the Fed. Right. And just like this is the third time in a row we're doing this. We're not going to get anything we want. Health and Human Services guy is already talking about banning all these processed foods, banning all these scientific innovations. Just 10 years ago, when I was joining the Libertarian Party, I remember Reason talking about how like these plants were fighting the government to make synthetic food for people. It's cheaper than raising an animal. There's no cruelty in it, right? Like it's safer. We can keep it cleaner. Advantage after advantage. We look at how they fought against the government, and now we have the libertarians selling out and just being like, "Well, I'm not going to eat the synthetic meat. I'm not going to eat the fake cow or whatever. I demand murder. I demand killing the animals. I demand suffering of animals." Like why? Like it's just, as you've said, it's hard to understand what they're thinking because it's not pragmatic. It is when Bill Weld went out and said, I'm here to stand up for Hillary Clinton. That was selling out.
Yes.
But it wasn't nearly as bad as, at least he didn't vote for her. At least he didn't endorse her, right? Like at least he's not out there joining a fundraising committee in order to support her. Until after, of course, he left the Libertarian Party.
Right. And let's face it. When Weld was selected, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
But when I asked, like, Larry Sharp, who was supposed – like, everybody wanted Gary and Larry in 2016, right? And I asked him, I said, how did William Weld get his way in there? Without missing a beat. He just goes, money. He delivered on his fundraising promises. So, yeah, we got somebody that for a lot of people was a bridge too far. But at least we got the part of the bargain that we sold out for, which was additional funds into the LP coffers, right? So to your point, maybe it was distasteful. And again, I did not support that. But at least you could see where the deal was. The deal was we get cash for putting this guy on the ticket, right?
Right.
In selling out to Trump and to RFK, though I haven't forgotten about him, what have we gotten? That's your point, and that's my point. Okay, let's say this cockamamie idea worked. What was the thing you were getting? Free Ross? It's not like Trump hasn't lied to us before. I think there are still people waiting for a wonderful wall that Mexico was going to pay for, right, from 2016. Like, what happened to that? Like, and again, I'm not saying I want a wall, but if you're a Trump supporter, you got to wonder, where's that wall, right? If you're a libertarian and an economically right-leaning, economics-focused libertarian, you're supporting a guy who is at best an MMT guy. At worst, he's like a mercantilist. So what are you getting? Tariffs? Trade wars? Somebody who is incredibly fixated on trade deficits as if they matter? You know, and so what are you getting when you advocate, if you're a libertarian, what are you getting when you advocate for Trump? So if someone said, he's going to make Rand Paul, I don't know, give him a cabinet position, right? And this is, we're guaranteed this is going to happen. He's going to make Thomas Massey, again, they're saying Department of Agriculture, but who cares? If you're a libertarian, you wouldn't want there to be a Department of Agriculture to begin with, right? So I'm struggling to understand, what part did we sell out for? What part are we continuing to sell out for? Why are we going to be the people that are going to be his hit squad, his Hitler youth that are going to run around and primary bad Republicans? Like literally this was tweeted out by McCardle today. So I'm struggling to understand, what are we gaining by selling out, Hody?
We haven't gained anything. I think the hope is that we would gain, okay, maybe we wouldn't start any new wars, right? Because Trump didn't start any wars during his terms in office. Yeah, maybe in technicality, but if you've listened to, and this is why I find there to be a disingenuousness, and I'll give this to you in the Mises Caucus. I remember listening to them talk about like, well, he's committing a genocide in Yemen. He's just, we're not calling it a war. It's doing what Barack Obama did, right? This isn't a new war. This is kinetic military action, right?
Right.
Drone strikes under Trump. He killed 330% more innocent people, increased in innocent civilian deaths. And that's what we know of, because what else he did, he got rid of needing to record every strike that he made, right? Like that, those mandates that were in place, he got rid of that. So the government no longer has to record. Right. So there's one mandate he got rid of, needing to record when he kills innocent people. And if you've listened to Thomas Woods or Dave Smith long enough, what causes wars? Ron Paul, for goodness sake, right?
Right.
It's not like
right.
these people get violent out of nowhere. They've had in it, their friends and family get killed by American drone strikes. You right. know, they've been they've got a bomb dropped on their heads and it says "From America with Love" on it. Like, yeah. of course they're radicalized against this. So what you're doing is I have to think intentionally suppressing what you already know to be true, that these are the things that start wars. And yet you're saying, well, war is so important. And I think Harris might be big on war. So I'm going to support this guy who's bragging about escalating wars with China, who said we should turn Iran into a glass sheet and just hired somebody who appears intent on doing that for the position yeah. that would actually turn Iran into a glass sheet. Somebody said he wants to finish off Gaza. Like, this guy is not anti-war. Like,
well, you know what's funny, Hody, on that? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we have a comment. So, yeah. and it plays in nicely. William says, Trump is still naming his cabinet and making picks. He just got elected last week. You two act as if he's been in office for a year. Yeah, William, you're absolutely right. And none of these guys have been confirmed yet. Absolutely. But to Hody's point, you're looking at Marco Rubio as Secretary of State, right? All he has to do is be confirmed by his Senate buddies, right? So you've got Marco Rubio that we know is a neocon, right? So, and you know, and Dave Smith will say, Angela McCardle will say, oh, well, you know, we're disappointed in that, but we're going to negotiate for the next cabinet. Who are you negotiating with? Do we really think Trump is sitting down? Oh, you know, I forgot to consult with Angela and Dave Smith on this. Hey, guys, get them down to Mar-a-Lago because I really need to hear who they want next. You know, you've got Rubio. You've got Pete Hegseth. I hope I'm pronouncing the same right. Secretary of Defense, somebody who's got no administrative experience. He was a major, and I think in the Air Force National Guard or Army National Guard. But anyway, he was deployed twice. So he's a soldier. Okay, whatever props as a libertarian we give to people who served in good faith, I would assume. But he's just a loyalist. He's a Fox News guy who's a loyalist. He's not necessarily, but he's certainly not someone who's saying, let's turn down the heat on these actions. Tulsi Gabbard, who a lot of people who are libertarians seem to casually ignore that she's a leftist in everything except her anti-war stance, right? So she's very much a Democrat in everything except her anti-war stance. But instead of being put in Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State, they put her as Director of National Intelligence, where she's got no experience in the spy game, right? She's a soldier. Mike Huckabee, Lee Zeldin, Elise Stefanik. These are not names that you would typically associate with libertarians being happy with. Gates for Attorney General. Look, I don't think highly of Gates. I think he's just a showman. His character to me is in question. And to your point, character's important because character tells us how people will act when nobody's looking at them, when the cameras are off. And that's why character's important to me, at least, right? Like, yeah. Because you're always going to be confronted with situations that you don't have a script for. You're always going to be confronted with things that you did not anticipate. Your character is what defines how you will react in those situations. Right. Character means nothing to me when you're reading off a teleprompter with your little quips and your speech writers that have laid everything out for you. It's what happens when situation X happens in Montana that you've never run into. What happens when you're presented with three bad choices? Your character is what defines your choice, your decision making and everything. So for a lot of these. Again, I'm not going to say all of them, but for the majority of them, I could see where a lot of libertarians would be like, hey, what are you doing? So to William's point, yeah, it's been a week. None of these have been confirmed, but you already see the games, right? Like the supposed Department of Government Efficiency. I don't know if people realize this or not. Not a real thing. It's no different than Cato or the Brookings Institute. It's a think tank. It has right. no capacity to do anything. No government official is bound to listen to them. Why are we making this like it's a real thing? Like Vivek and Elon are bouncing around. We're going to do this. We're going to fire whatever. 75% of federal workers are like, none of that is happening. Who's right. buying into this? Who's buying into this? And I see our own leadership retweeting this and going like, see, we told you we were right to simp for Trump. Well, is that really the case? I don't think so, Hody. I think, and while I allow for people of good conscience to say they made an error, they were either fooled or they themselves just misread the situation initially. Again, Karen Ann is someone that I've had on the show, and she was very open about that. She says, look, I'm working within the rules. I have plenty of friends on that LNC, but we've lost our way. And the chair has lost her way. Very, you know, again, retired folks now saying, hey, we were there. This is not kosher. You know, someone like a Todd Hagopian, I forget the other, Beth, I think was in there saying the same thing. We've got folks like you who say, I'm still a believer in the ideas that brought the Mises Caucus together. But again, the execution is not where we want it to be. So let me ask you this. Do you think the Libertarian Party is beyond repair at this point? Or do you think, like a phoenix, something new has to arise from its ashes? Or is this still salvageable?
I mean, it'll be salvaged just because it's like, will somebody, you know, if something dies in the desert, buzzards are going to eat it. Is it a very tasty thing to eat? Well, that's a totally different story.
Right.
I do think that it will exist in some way. I think that the better vehicle for libertarianism is no longer the Libertarian Party. I think at this point it's a joke. There comes a point. So when my gal and I met, we met on like a Christian dating site. And we talked about how with the toxicity within Christianity right now, Americanized Christianity and Christian nationalism, how now if somebody says Christian on their dating profile, if we were to date again, it would be a red flag more than it would be an indicator of the kind of person, like a good person, right? And like I said, we're both believers. Like we both, that matters to us. But we both said if we were to date again, we wouldn't even say we're Christians on our profiles. At this point, the term libertarianism is so awful. You know, like you said, you understand the average voter and the average citizen. I understand. I'm deeply connected with these people. I would not tell them I'm a libertarian right now, much less a member of the Libertarian Party. It's such an embarrassing thing to be associated with. Broke because Trump said he was going to pay for it and apparently stuck us with the bill. And yet, what did we do? We rewarded him with our support.
Talking about like, the convention, right?
The convention, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, well, Trump, I thought Trump was going to pay for it. He said he was going to pay for it. Well, much like the wall, somebody else didn't end up paying for it. Should have figured that there. We still supported him anyway, right? Like, we are an absolute joke. You know, it's laughable what we've done. Now, I want to go to say to William here, I have no choice but to give him a chance. And I hope I'm wrong. Like, I do not rail against Trump very often because it's more of his ideas and his character that are a problem. It's not, Trump's just a guy, you know? It's like, I don't want to rail against, like, a specific Pharisee, but, you know, what it means to be a Pharisee is a problem. And so I have huge issues with Trump and Trumpianism and the MAGA movement and what the Libertarian Party did. But I don't want to call out just individuals all the time. I think they might be bad actors. Like, I mean, I have no problem mentioning their names just as examples. We've talked about, you know, Heiss, Smith, McArdle, you know, bad ideas from all them. But I don't want to make this just about them because we elected to support these people, right? Like, we have said as a libertarian movement, if Dave Smith were to run, there's no doubt he would get the nomination, right?
Right.
But this, like I said, that tells the whole world we're okay with people who calls people F slurs, R slurs, K slurs. Right. We're okay with somebody who talks about, oh, if you get raped, you know, after taking 12 shots, cry me a river. Right. Like, we're okay with that behavior. And that's really the issue. Right. So, like, is this kind of thing salvageable? Look, we can replace money and donors. That's as simple as just voting for somebody new. We can replace the membership lost. We do membership drives often, right? In fact, to get back into the positive briefly before the convention, how did we do it? We had all the candidates compete to get on stage. It was a donation drive. They raised a ton of money from it. Money is replaceable. People are replaceable. The loss of our values and the loss of our soul and who we are is not. And I think that that means it's something that if liberty is going to come, it's going to come from outside of the Libertarian Party. We need to be doing things like food, not bombs, as opposed to working hard within a local system to try and put yet another ineffective council person on the board. And I'm telling you this as somebody who has worked in successful libertarian campaigns to do this kind of thing. The difference I've made, I have to be honest with myself, is negligible. And it's all undone by what the Libertarian Party National Committee has done. But the real lesson here is this can be done all the time. We're repeating a cycle. We're in this doomed cycle. We did it 30 years ago. We did it 30 years ago before that. And what happened? We reset. We had to start over again. We reset. We had to start over again. I don't think the Libertarian Party is doomed to anything except ineptitude. We are going to reset again. And 30 years from now, somebody's going to propose this same idea. Some lying, murdering, literal rapist in Trump, by the way, politician is going to make a bunch of promises to us. War criminal, right? Like, let's throw all these things out there. We're going to try and work with them because we think that the stripper is really into us this time, right? The stripper really means all that stuff she said to us. We're going to sell out. And once again, we will be back to having conversations with, like, you and me, but 30 years from now, you and I will be talking about this and say, I can't believe we did it again. We fell for it again. They have us right where they want us. The consistent radical libertarians are the ones who are making a difference, who say, no, I'm not compromising on these issues. Right. But when we start coalitioning without these outside groups, it sounds like a great thing. But we include pedophiles. We include pro-war people in our anti-war rallies. What are we doing? Right. Like, this is sabotage, whether intentional or unintentional. It's stupid sabotage. We are blowing up our chances. Nobody is going to look on a stage with a convicted pedophile or somebody who has said we need to put, like, what, Ukrainians down like dogs, and then go, oh, yeah, these guys are really anti-war. They really hate war. I'm going to go support them. I want to put Ukrainians down like sick dogs.
Or even Hody, it's not even that dramatic. When you've got Trump going up to cheering crowds saying, like, I think we're going to propose 1 year in jail if you desecrate the American flag. Simple, right. nothing complicated. You know, it's like, And again, here's the thing. If you're a Republican and you're cheering that, I'm like, God bless you. You know, you're a Republican. It aligns with your ideology. Fair enough. But if you're calling yourself a libertarian, how do you align with someone like that? Because he's not even hiding what he is. He's telling you, yeah, I'm for censorship when it benefits me. Like, I know I've been the target of censorship, and to be fair to Trump, he has been targeted by, you know, whether it's Facebook or YouTube or whatever, right? Targeted
literally, so, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so you would think someone like that would be like, no, man, I'm not into this restricted speech and censorship. But here he is 2 weeks ago to cheering crowds like, yeah, put those flag burners in jail for a year because we love America. And FYI, what's more collective? What's a better example of collectivism than nationalism? We're all Americans first. We're not individuals. We're Americans first. Again, consistent with republicanism, not consistent with any type of libertarianism.
Right. I mean, this is, and I think what's sad is you learn this from Mises, right? To talk about how far this goes back, Mises made the mistake of siding with fascists in order to defeat the authoritarian socialists. And he recognized it as a mistake, right?
Right.
The problem isn't that Mises made a mistake. The problem isn't even that Angela made a mistake. The problem is we're not learning from this mistake. Right. Like, I don't have I understand the seduction of it. I understand the idea of getting a seat at the table, as they always say, right? Like, we could be negotiating some more libertarians in power. If we just get a few libertarians, like members of the Libertarian Party in the cabinet, people will start recognizing that we're legitimate people. We have good ideas. You know, if we make agriculture amazing and we get the Department of Agriculture position, people will be like, oh my gosh, those libertarians, if they were right about agriculture, are they also right about economy? I understand, right? Like, I get the seduction. I've I'm telling you this as a former GOP strategist. I've made that pitch to you before, right? I've done this before. I get it, right? It's just everybody else was smart enough to understand that I was lying through my teeth. Like, there's no way. We give a libertarian a position. And what is RFK running? The one position where he's looking forward to banning a bunch of scientific advancements, banning a bunch of progress, banning, I mean, processed foods, right? Like banning a whole, like, yeah, we put this libertarian whose one weakness, that's going to be his character flaw, that ends up exploiting the entire thing. Like, Trump can say he's anti-war all day. But again, the character flaws, it's going to keep happening. Our character, government's character is not going to change. It is in its nature coercive. Libertarians used to know this, right? So if we recognize that the government is in, by its very nature coercive, we can't do business with them. We're free marketers. We do uncoerced business, right? So we should be doing, we should be making them come to us, recognizing our things, you know, recognizing what we want and catering to us. And it may not feel rational. Listen, standing with trans people right now, standing with immigrant people right now is not popular. I do, but I recognize that it's not popular. The Christians have dropped the ball on this one. The Bible has over 400 verses about being kind and gracious and good and feeding and taking care of immigrants, right? Like, and we, the Christianity in the West has just completely screwed it up. I mean, there are more verses about taking care of immigrants and getting to heaven than anything else you do to get to heaven, right? Like, it is a critical part of my faith, but right-wing authoritarianism has infiltrated this faith and infected it, right? And we have to purge that. We have to cleanse that. How do we cleanse it? You mentioned cleansing with light, not looking to cleanse with censorship, but I'm also looking to cleanse. You know, I am not going to shut up about the lies and the terrible things that Donald Trump does or that his administration will do. These people that are libertarians that are getting cabinet positions, look, you're cheering about Tulsi Gabbard. She's a pro-Israel war thing. She opposed the ceasefire. And she, what is she doing? She's working in the one position where it's going to make it so that she can actually be like, hey, let's kick a few more bombs over their way, right? Like, he's putting these people in these positions. I had a lot of hope the first time. I was hopeful. I admit it. I shouldn't have been. But, you know, when the Department of Transportation was kind of libertarian leaning, and I was like, oh, maybe we're actually going to get rid of that. Just kidding. It's all bigger than ever, you know?
Right.
One of the things that I wanted to make sure I get to is we never predict accurately the evils that people will do when they're in office. Nobody was going to predict that Obama started 8 new wars when he was in office. Nobody, right? Like, everybody like suspected, honestly, if you had a criticism about him in war, it's that he was too naive. He wanted to withdraw too many troops. He was going to be too anti-interventionalist. Turned out the opposite was true. Then we get Trump in office. Nobody thought that he was going to just like believe a bunch of Instagram lies and try to like have a bunch of people that storm the Capitol and then refuse to tell them to stand down. Like, they're chanting about lynching people. Like, nobody predicted some kind of, like, I mean, I'm sorry, but a bad insurrection is still an insurrection. Nobody knew that he was going to do something like that.
Right.
But he did. You know, nobody knew he was going to be like a big tariff and tax guy. In fact, they thought he was going to be too free market. That was the fear.
Right.
Joe Biden, think of all the fears that you had with Joe Biden. You know, remember when people write Obama's America, the Dinesh D'Souza, right? Obama's America, Biden's America, right? None of the Biden's America stuff came true. What did come true? Within the Inflation Reduction Act, he gave limitless power to pharmaceutical drug companies. Like over not only drugs that exist, but drugs that will exist in the future. I mean, if you read the text, it is haunting how many people are being harmed. You know, this is why, if you'll remember when he said, oh, I'm going to make the insulin people negotiate, right? In exchange for them capping insulin at 2.5%, all pharmaceutical or 2.5, I'm sorry, 2.5%, that's 2.5 times the market value. So you're still paying way more than what the free market would say it would be. In exchange for that, the pharmaceutical companies were like, sure, as long as we get power over like every ingestible ever. Right. And so as a result, anybody you know on pain management, ask them right now what's happened to the prices of their management, right? Like, ask them now their options that they have. There are no options. And it's not just pain management. I mean, it's anything. It's cancer management. Right. It's seizure medication. It's all of it.
Right.
Nobody predicted that Joe Biden was going to do that. It just happened. So I can't tell you what exactly Trump is going to do. Like, he might blow up Iran just because that's something he said he wants to do and something that his team wants. But more than likely, it's going to come out of left field. It's going to be something, you know, it's going to be something like he's going to nationalize like farmers or something like that. And I'm just going to be like, what? Nobody thought that was going to happen, but here we are, right? Like, something like
unintended,
that.
Unintended consequences, they'll always bite you in the ass. Absolutely. Yeah. Hody Johns, thank you so much. We've been talking for an hour and a half, and the time has just flown by. Thank you so much for joining us. Please, if you've got anything you want to promote, your Twitter handle, any articles you have coming up or anything, please do so.
Sure. I'm Hody Johns. You can find me at Hody Johns on Facebook. I'm at the Hode Man on social media, whether it's Twitter or Blue Sky, if that's what you're on right now. The Hode Man, T-H-E-H-O-D-E-M-A-N. My big thing is cultural right now. As you can probably tell, Big John, I am jaded on politics. So I've been leading Christian groups for a while. We welcome non-Christians as well. We have really fascinating discussions in it. We talk about real, genuine solutions. It's actually I did not think it would get as big as it was going to get. And reach as many people as it reaches. So if you want to be part of like a Christian group like that, where if you're ever scared to ask a question or just say, man, I don't really like this part of the Bible. I don't really get it. And you want someplace to feel safe. We're the Love First Christians. We got a Discord group together. We do live streams. So yeah, the Love First Christians, it's an open invitation. Simply just ask me for one and I can get it to you. Other than that, yeah, member of the We Are Libertarians Network. I promote that. Of course, we talk anarchy all the time. And as always, one of my favorites, I'm not a regular there and I'm not a host or anything like that, but Grumblings Media, there's this guy named Big John. You absolutely have to follow his channel. I just started listening to it, sent me a link with like Larry Sharp, where they kind of get into talks about like political violence, what that means, just really deep stuff. So yeah, Big John there, you'll want to follow him too.
Thank you so much, Hody. And of course, you're welcome back anytime. Hopefully we've made a friend for the future, someone we can count on, man. Absolutely. Love to have you back in the future. And everyone else, as Hody said, we're at Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can follow me at BigJohn_XM on Twitter. Otherwise, just look for Grumblings Media. You'll find all of us there. And until next time, everyone, please, peace.